Blog Talk Radio.
We're grateful to be back again tonight for part two on a very powerful and educational dialogue, the topic being African-American millennials, what's on their minds. This is part two, and we're grateful to have back with us again our very special guest, Mr. Mario Abney, and we're going to bring him on in our customary format in just a little bit. And we look forward to having our panelists. But more importantly, I look forward to engaging you, our listening audience. 657-383-0944 is the number to call. Feel free to join us in our dialogue here, and we will be happy to bring you in. We're going to go through our normal format. And as you know, for any new listeners, this is a radio dialogue that is initiated by Building Families and Communities Institute, Incorporated. That is a research arm for our nonprofit organization based in Nashville, Tennessee. And we're aiming to open national dialogue on issues that are relative to our families, our communities, and our society as a whole. And that fits right into the context of our topic tonight, African-American millennials, what's on their mind. During the first part of this two-part series, you might recall we had to leave due to other pastoral duties, but we left that discussion with the discovery that for African Americans who fall in the millennial generation, as described by the author's House and his co-author, talking about millennials in the early 80s, that there's a double concern. So tonight, Mr. Abney and myself and our panelists and you, our listening audience, we very much hope, we'll try to understand that a little bit better. And so, as you know, the show is, you're able to archive the show after the fact and share it with your friends and families. And www.bfcinstitute.com. Feel free, if you don't catch us tonight, to shoot us an email or contact us in our Facebook group there that you can connect directly from the webpage and dialogue with us. We'll have our questions from tonight and yesterday or this past Tuesday. Those conversational, they'll be in a conversational thread on our Facebook group, the BFC Institute Participant Group. There in Facebook. So if you're listening to us from the Facebook link, feel free to call us again here. That number is 657-383-0944. Now that we've taken care of housekeeping duties here, we're going to get right into it because our guest is here and we're going to bring him in live in just a little bit. You heard an original tune from Mr. Abney, who is a professional musician and cultural icon. We rolling. Let's roll. Let's roll. That's apropos to where we are now. And as I mentioned earlier, we're talking about African-American millennials as a part two of this particular conversation, what's on their minds. This is our monologue. 1 Corinthians, the first chapter, verses 27 through 30. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise. And God has chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty. and based things of the world and things which are despised has God chosen, yea, the things which are not, to bring naught things that are. Verse 29 says, that no flesh should glory in his presence. But of him are ye in Christ Jesus, who of God is made unto us wisdom and the righteousness and sanctification of redemption, that according to it as it's written, he that glorieth, let him glory in the Lord. Now, we spoke yesterday, and our guest shared a lot of things, and it prompted me to share with you today this particular monologue that will kind of help you understand from a historical and sociological context some of the things that he mentioned relative to the state of African-American youth, male and female, who struggle with cultural identity. And I hope from this monologue you'll gain something, and then we do have questions that we'll delve into when we bring our guest in. Afro-male aggression exhibited throughout urban America today is a result of what at BFC Institute research arm we call a violence continuum. The continuum begins with ignorance about self. Frustration stemming from false assumptions morph into fear-driven anger over adversity and society. Prolonged anger turns into anxiety. Ultimately, unprocessed anxiety manifests into extreme and self-inflicting violence within certain neighborhoods. Ironically, the main object of displaced Afro-male violence is the very village, quote-unquote, from whence he comes. That's the village we often talk about it takes to raise a child. The African-American male subgroup has existed in America for approximately now 398 years, that count being from 1619 to present. However, Afro-males have been formally free as, quote, American citizens, unquote, for only about 152 years, that's five generations since 1865. His ethnic character has been shaped largely by political, economic, and social trends of society. Rather than operating solely from his own agenda, he has heavily depended on the plans of others. Tragically, important lessons learned by males of previous generations have been lost over time, leaving the present generation in serious doubt about their place in America and as an Afro-male citizen, not only in the U.S., but of the world. In 1712, a key method used to dominate the Afro family unit was male dehumanization. This process came with both intended and unintended consequences. As of December 18, 2015, 152 years have passed since the start of government efforts to empower so-called Negro, colored, Black, Afro-American, and now referred to as African-American males to assume their rights and privileges of American citizenship. A careful study of Afro-male evolution in America will reveal an unintended consequence today of self-alienation from the American dream for a significant population of Afro-males at this present generation. And we're talking about the so-called millennial generation. In conclusion, if a character poll was taken of the typical Afro-male today, the results would most likely indicate that they're mystified when it comes to identifying their character as men. By and large, young Afro-American males today have lost respect and confidence in their elders as a result in part of the rise and fall of Afro-elected officials in politics, strife and dissension among Afro-religious institutions across urban America, and the generational social disparities that are experienced in each of these neighborhoods across the country. The triple threat to healthy Afro-male discovery includes three things. One, a failure to educate males from birth of the accomplishments, and the setbacks of their historic forerunners. Two, the destruction of the Afro family unit by male and female rivalries. And lastly, the harmfully misleading influences of pop culture. This is what our guests made reference to yesterday. I'm glad to bring on to you again our very good friend and our guest tonight, Mr. Mario Abney, who is a professional musician and a cultural icon. If you listen to his conversation, you'll understand that. Also, we have our regular panelists and our friend, Pastor Ricky Waller, who's joining us again tonight. Mr. Abney, how are you doing, sir?
All right. Dr. Lee, how are you?
Great. We have to make it up to you because we cut you off yesterday. But I want you to just let it rip tonight, man. You understand what I'm saying? You dropped some. I listened to the entire show from Tuesday night, and you dropped some heavy information, and it led me to some targeted questions that I'd like to see if we can get answered, and answered tonight. And I know Pastor Waller will be dropped all right in there with us. How you doing, Pastor? That's Waller? Okay. I believe he's there with us. But Pastor Waller, you there? Okay. I see him. He's online, but we'll catch up with us here. Moving along, right along here. The first question that I'd like to, and this is basically based largely on what we discussed the other day. Let's talk first from the idea. What do you think, Mr. Abney, the cultural identity of African Americans who were born in the millennial generation, as identified by Strauss and Howe, consists of? What should that cultural identity consist of?
Well, I can tell you what I believe it consists of.
Okay.
I can tell you what I believe it consists of. I think it consists of a conglomerate right now of a lot, a collage, a big, a mixture of a lot of different belief systems and a lot of different aspects of people striving to identify themselves and know themselves. Now we have so many micro demographics within our demographic as a people. We have so many micro demographics. Yeah, we could say, African Americans, right? But then at the same time, there's so many people that believe so many different things, it's like, and we live in a time right now where it's this push for all this individuality, but I think the thing is right now with all of these different microcultures within the culture of being black or African American or whatever name you want to give it, I think that there lacks a group cohesiveness, and that is both to our demise and to our triumph, like how, earlier when you were speaking about the scriptures, it said that the things of the foolish will confound the wise, we look at so many aspects of, our lack of group consistency or cohesiveness that, you know, it's hard for us to stand as a united front. However, because there are so many of us, you know, who believe so many different things, that in lies the great thinkers and creators and generators and motivators and speakers and people who are indeed the mind of God, because the creator is in us. So he expresses himself through us in different ways. You know, I think the thing that we have to do is learn to love each other with the differences that we have, but still have some kind of moral tenet to live by.
Okay, let me speak to something issue you raised. In my monologue, I made reference to various connotations that have been used since 1619, since people of Afro descent, or Negro as they were first called coming to America, have been here. And I talked about being called Negro, being called colored, evolving into the identity as Black, and then in the 70s, Afro, and then and currently now since the 85, on the influence of Jesse Jackson Sr., African American. Well, you raise an interesting point, because there are some of our people who are not comfortable with being called Black anymore, and then there are others who are not comfortable with being called African American for different reasons. And I think it speaks to the point that you're making. As a result of not really knowing culturally who should first define your culture, how do you name it and claim it, a lot of young people are succumbed to the interest and influence of various other social groups out there. And some people even say, well, I'm mixed. I'm just mixed. I don't know who I am. I'm mixed. You know, it's interesting. We've had several shows prior to this one, and one of the people we talked about was W.E.B. Du Bois. How he talked about the double conscious or the dual conscious of the Negro coming out of slavery. And what's interesting today, in 2017, 152 years later, after legally the Constitution ratified the 13th Amendment ending slavery, and then in 1868 the 14th Amendment saying that you have rights of citizenship, right, spell them out, and then after the efforts of Frederick Douglass, in 1870, you got suffrage rights or voting rights. We're still at a point, Mr. Abney, where we are questioning, many of us, maybe not everybody, but particularly this so-called millennial generation, are questioning exactly who are they and what is their function. And I see this manifested through Black Lives Matter in particular. Pastor Wall, are you there?
Okay.
Go ahead, Mr. Abney. Go ahead.
Well, you know, looking at all of these different aspects of the movement of us still as a people trying to define ourselves in a society, we're trying to define ourselves by, I feel like, the terms of the ruling class culture, instead of indeed reaching all the way back and, you know, defining ourselves by our cultural heritage, you know. So I think, you know, we are, yes, indeed in the same place, but in order to make the true drastic change, I think we need to reach all the way back, you know, and really, you know, deal with, you know, the ancient, that, you know, and we, you know, we kind of got to it before, you know, talking about it before, and deal with some of the ancient world concepts, and deal with some of the, you know, maybe we need to get out of the church a little bit, you know, maybe we need to broaden our mindset to embrace some of the aspects of our ancestors, not necessarily from a Western religious standpoint, but, you know, because, you know, when we get off into deep things, a lot of times we lose each other as a people, you know. We don't go all the way back and study, you know.
Right. Well, let me play devil's advocate here for a second. You're suggesting that perhaps we should embrace more traditional Afrocentric values and ideas from the motherland. Am I hearing you correctly?
Yeah, and, you know.
Okay, all right, hold on. All right, hold on.
Yeah,
hold on.
Hello?
Hey, Pastor Waller, how you doing?
Yeah,
hey,
hello?
Is that you, Pastor Waller?
Oh, no, it's Outcast.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry, that's Outcast, I'm sorry. How you doing? Just hold tight.
Yeah, how you doing?
I just want,
sir, I'm listening.
Give me 1 second, I want to hear from you. Don't leave me, 1 second.
Okay.
So, look,
okay.
Abney, what you're saying is that we should embrace those ancient values and traits of ancient Africans. Here's the challenge. I'm playing devil's advocate. The challenge is we live in America, and there are certain businesses that we haven't taken, personal business, as a subgroup, we hadn't taken care in America. So many of us couldn't even afford to go back to Africa if we wanted to. Now, that's a trip I would love to take. But many people would have a challenge with being able to finance such a lifestyle and continue their daily walk here in American custom. What do you say about that? Go ahead and respond to that, and then we're going to hear from our colleague.
Okay, you know, up on studying, it starts with studying. You know, anything
okay.
that you do, you commit, you know, to a lifestyle. You know, we're talking
right.
about not only – we're not just necessarily talking about a plane trip to Africa. You know, we're talking about a consciousness, thinking through the lens of mind of a people that we are. And when I say Afrocentric consciousness, for example, you know, the Bible was translated from the temples in Egypt, you know.
Oh, okay.
So instead of going through necessarily you know, the channels of viewing ourselves from a westernized mindset, you know, some of the principles of some of the, like, let's say the Ten Commandments were derived from the 42 laws of Ma'at. In the 42 laws of Ma'at, it says, I have not. In the Ten Commandments, it says, I shall not. You see? So, I mean, you know, looking at things a different way, looking at the connectivity of, you know what I'm saying, life of those around us, looking at God in man instead of looking at data from the aspect of, you know, a sky God that will, you know, someday save us, understanding the divinity within, and that's part of African culture. You know, the understanding of the spirit. The spirit is the essence of being of someone or thing.
I think I understand where you come from a little bit now. Caller, you any question or comment there?
Yes, I do. We're talking
okay.
about
All
Africa.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna ask a caller. Is he familiar with Scipio Africanus?
Yeah.
Is he familiar with him? Are you?
Yeah, so Scipio Africanus
was
a conqueror that actually came into Africa and conquered.
From
and
where?
He was a European.
He was a Roman. Go ahead, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, you know, Rome, European, when I say European, Italy is part of Europe. Italy is in Rome. Rome is in Italy, so I just say European.
Right.
He wasn't of a Kibbalah. The actual name of the motherland was a Kibbalah. And as you know, yeah, you're right. You
Eden.
Know, we just started.
Eden, too. Eden. I had
Eden.
That Eden.
Eden, a
yes,
Kibbalah.
God of Eden.
Yep. A
yes.
Garden of Eden in Ethiopia.
All right, let me allow the caller.
He didn't conquer Ethiopia, though. He didn't get to Ethiopia. He didn't get that.
They didn't let him.
He didn't get Ethiopia.
Right, go ahead, caller. Finish your thought there, caller.
I'm listening. No, let me listen to him. With,
okay.
Go
okay,
ahead,
what,
sir.
I don't know if you heard our intro. Mario, hold on one second, gentlemen. Let me back up. I don't know if you heard our intro, but Mario Abney is our guest. He's a professional musician out of, he specializes in jazz music and Afrocentric culture. I believe that was part of his major in college.
Okay.
And he is our guest tonight from out of New Orleans, Louisiana. And so he was on with us last Tuesday, and we had to we picked up the conversation today. But that was a great question, caller. And if I might piggyback off of that, Mr. Abney, I think what's germane to the conversation, there are a lot of millennials today, or people that are born between 1982 up to about 2000 or 2005, who are not aware of the fact of Ciprio Africanus and the effect that he had on the indigenous people of Kemet and Eden and you know, those places like that. How do we get them to that point where we began to bring that sort of consciousness?
Well, I think it is indeed an education, but see, this is the problem that we run into as a people, is that we are still on the assimilation mindset instead of the mindset of creating our own systems of doing things. For example, they call the system the prison to the pipeline, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, when they refer to that, there's a reason why they refer to that. Everything about the school system is not geared toward the development of the Afrocentric, or should I say the indigenous melanated mind. You know,
you're right.
You know, question.
Yeah.
Question. When he speak of indigenous minds, it not only relates to Negroid people, it's poor white people also. The problem is in the United States of America, in the United States of America, you know, certain people that you listen to, whether they black or white, if you listen to a white person, they gear towards white. If you listen to blacks, they gear towards black. But you have indigenous black people as well as indigenous white people
in America.
You know, this is a problem. You know, they never want poor whites and poor blacks to come together, because if poor blacks and whites come together, the powers that be will lose America. Now, when I go back to anthropology, they speak of the Negro people, the Anglo-Saxon people, and the Mongolians. You know, they were mixed. So, I see a problem.
Sure.
You know, I may be coming off the subject, but let's just stop and think for a minute.
Okay,
I'm listening. Go ahead.
Well, that's you raise a good point.
Okay,
and go ahead.
So,
go ahead and speak to that.
And me, I am not an African American. I am an American of Negro descent. Anthropology.
Ah.
Bring that back down.
Ah.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
We can all.
Okay. You know, we can all choose to define ourselves, you know, to be whoever we want to be. And, you know, like I said earlier, that's part of all the many micro demographics within Black America or African America, African American, you know. Whatever you want to call it.
African American. African American. Let me describe this. Okay.
Hold on. One second, Carl. Hold on one second. Let him finish his thought, and then we'll come back to you. Go ahead, Mr. Abney.
Okay. African American. They come from Africa, and they come to the United States of America. Those are your African Americans. We were my ancestors were brought over here illegally.
All right, hold on one second, Jim. Hold on. I think Mr. Abney's phone kind of crashed on him a little bit. Go ahead, caller, finish your thought, and then we'll go to Mr. Abney and let him finish his thought, and then we'll come back. Go ahead, caller.
Okay. I am not an African American. No, go ahead.
Okay.
I listen.
Well, we got you. What you're saying is you identify yourself as an American of Negro descent. Did we get that correctly?
Negro descent, yes.
Okay, got you. And now, what were you saying, Mr. Abney? How were you responding to that?
What I was going to say was we all can choose to define ourselves culturally, mm-hmm. however we want to, in a conscious
okay.
mind. There is indeed a social conscious mind of black people, melanated people, what you want to call it, these people, the descendants of some of the slaves that were here, you see what I'm saying, in America. There is a conscious
okay.
mind of
okay.
all of us. There is a conscious
right.
collective mind of us as a people. And certain things, you know, bother us, certain things upset us as a people. There's a reason why, you know, we tend to say, oh, yeah, you know, the Black Lives Matter and all this. You know, I'm not a Black Lives Matter representative or anything like that.
Thank you.
I want you to understand, like there is a reason why black people come together and give themselves an umbrella name and say we are this or we are that, because I believe
right.
genetically and ancestrally something speaks to us about the level of irony we live in as a people, right? So we all
okay.
have many
yeah.
different perspectives about how we want to call ourselves and what we want to call ourselves, right? So, you know, we are in agreement and looking at things from a different perspective. Both you and I
okay.
are part of that micro demographic that I speak of. But the thing that I believe is going to help to unite us is when we understand the spirit and
mm-hmm.
the man and the connection of the two from an aspect not of European lens or mindset. We need to look deeper source, and tap into our cultural and.
Can I have a question? Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
May I ask a question?
Oh. Yes. All right. Go
ahead. To the young man, he's very intelligent. But my question is this. If black lives matter, why are blacks still slaughtering blacks in the streets all over America?
Oh,
I'm not going to just talk about Chicago. What if black lives
right.
matter?
Let me break that down for you.
You know, why are we killing each other?
Let me break that down. Let me break that down
right.
for you, right?
Go ahead.
All right. So, first of all, you know, the black man, and history will tell you this, the black man is the oldest existing natural man of this planet. The further
I agree.
The further you go back, the blacker you get.
I
so
agree.
You got to understand, every race came out of us if you dealing with the whole evolution thing. And you come from that aspect.
I agree.
So at the beginning, in the very beginning, it was still black on black. You got to understand that. Human beings come in all shapes, forms, and sizes as they did now, but the consciousness of the black man came in all shapes, forms, sizes then. So we're dealing with an eternal problem. We're dealing with a human struggle, but we're looking at it from a westernized, Eurocentric mindset that has us in such a place. The black man can't be a man because he has to be something else in a category before he becomes a man in the eyes of the Eurocentric
mindset. Are you a man? Are you a man?
Yeah.
Are you a conscious man?
Yeah. I want you to understand. All right,
then.
This
black race is right, talking about, they need to become more conscious. I'm sorry.
Well, I think we're in agreement. Hold on, Carlos. Let him finish it.
We're in agreement.
Let him finish it. Yeah, I think you're in agreement. Let him finish his thought there, Carlos. Go ahead, Mr. Abney.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is until we learn to look at ourselves as indeed a man, and no, cause check it out, right? We hear all this violence, hear about all this violence, right? So we don't know the backstories for some of this stuff, you know? So, you know, it's automatically assumed it's just black on black, we hate each other. You know, if we going to break it down, we got to understand that everyone came from us. So this is a problem of all people because all people do bad. Because you can,
right.
they don't report in the white neighborhoods on the 10 o'clock news when something happened. They don't report when, you know, the white epidemic of heroin and these things. You know what I'm saying? They don't report all of the different things that happen in the other different communities. They focus on the black community, and that's because we're in a system of implied white supremacy.
I disagree.
Okay.
You know, when this starts sitting at Mint and these different offset counties, what do they do? You know, when you go to the drugstore to buy a certain drug, Sudafed, you have to have ID, sir. In Tennessee, if I want to buy Sudafed, I got to show ID. Now they were doing that crystal meth, developing that in the rural counties. Now I'm gonna take you back to World War II, sir. You know, when Hitler, his soldiers, that's what they had, crystal meth. This is why they died. This was the biggest reason that they lost World War II, because they was on meth. Meth is not something new. Meth has been around for a long time. Go back to World War II now. And talking about the black man, no. The biggest problem that the black man have is everybody, all these young kids, they want to put their pants down their butt and they want to sell drugs. You know, go to Ohio. You know, all of them dying up there doing drugs. And talking about everything come from black. You can say that all you want, but the black man haven't learned nothing, sir. Listen to you out of all them centuries, all the millenniums, haven't learned nothing. We still kill each other. We talking about Black Lives Matter. Come on.
And now, who are you now? All right. Now, go ahead.
Hold on 1 second. Let's do this. This is great conversation. Now, I think where it's getting to is that the next question I wanted to ask, and that was relative to what are the characteristics of ethnic identity for people we refer to as black, Negro, colored, Afro-American, African-American. But if you all will, this is a great conversation. If you can hang in with us, caller, what I'd like to do, we're at the top of the hour here. I'd like to get our message in, and then we'll come right back. And he asked a great question. In terms of why is it after all these centuries we still are struggling to identify or struggling to do what is right in terms of who we are and how to sustain ourselves? Man, great question. Y'all bear with me just for a second, and we'll come right back after this.
Hey, they call me Poop. I'm from these streets. Somehow, I live to see my 18th birthday. I managed to graduate from juvenile detention to adult prison. People try to tell me I should grow up being a man, but I'm the best man I know. Somebody asked where I see myself 10 years. Man, I'm just trying to survive these streets day by day.
BFC Institute needs your help to reach the Pookies across America. Please support our traveling educational lecture series addressing perceived threats to African American males. To learn more, please visit us at bfcinstitute.com. That is bfcinstitute.com. Simply click the red sticker for details.
Welcome back to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, and we're on tonight with our special guest, Mr. Mario Abney, who is a professional musician and cultural icon out of New Orleans, Louisiana. He's on with us tonight, one of our target cities to bring our seminar and lecture to. We're grateful for his partnership. And we have a caller from 615 who is offering some great conversation and dialogue here. And on the other side of the break, first of all, you give us a call here, 657-383-0944. We love to hear your question or comment. On the other side, the caller raised a great question. Why is it then after centuries? I think, is that right, caller? It's a century. We still,
decade,
young people
millennium.
Still struggle. Millennials. We're still struggling
millennium.
To be who,
yeah, black
be who we
are. Why is it?
Okay. All right. And
let's
give Mr. Abney an opportunity to take a stab at that, and we'll come back with it with you as well. Uh-oh, look like we lost our caller there. Hopefully he'll call us right back there. All right, go ahead, Mr. Abney. That was a great question he raised. Go ahead, Mr. Abney.
It's an old song called "Human Nature,"
okay.
By Mike. Okay, you know, and we talk about human nature, right? We talk about that. Indeed, that individuality, right?
Mm.
People, human beings, tend to want to express their individuality. However, when people are not in agreement of different perspectives and need is in place and people are on top of each other, violence becomes part of the way people deal with each other because there's hostility and basic needs aren't met. Now, that's not to say that there's an excuse for violent behavior, but when certain psychological needs aren't met and certain conditions aren't right, you know, people do violent things. Now, in a broader perspective, human beings in general are different personalities. They have different personalities. Human nature, you see what I'm saying? People end up fighting and doing wrong things. People have to learn how to love, you know?
Okay.
You know, it's the
okay.
history of and the history of systematic oppression has hasn't done anything but shown us a negative image of who we are or who they say we are. So we, as long as we believe that lens and we look at each other through that lens, you know, of westernized culture, you know, TV is based on, you know, the history of TV is based on racism. You can look at it now. You can look, go on the supermarket. You know, you looking at a culture that says this is our culture. This is our way. This is the way it is. You see what I'm saying?
So yes. So to the extent that we do live in, as was pointed out, Western civilization, the United States is a part of that, integral part of it. And it is driven by Eurocentric ideas. The Romanus Pax is the basis of the United States Constitution that we have as well. In fact, the United Constitution of the United Nations, right? So, yes, that's a well-established fact. Hold on 1 second. Let me finish this thought. Even though people of Afro descent who live in America, just like Irish or just like Greek or just like German or Hellenistic people or Jewish individuals, they all identify still with an origin in the lexicon of the legal system, the word jus solis has to do with the birthright of your ancestors. Okay, they can identify with that. It seems to be a challenge for people of Afro heritage and origin to identify or trace their birthright. And I think perhaps that's where the rub is the challenge.
Yeah, yeah. You know, yeah. And it's a compound of many things. It's a compound of many things. There's many reasons, you know, why violence is going on in the black community. I mean, black on black. Violence, we could say it began as a response to drugs being put in the community. So we could say first gang, you know what I'm saying, the gang leaders were taken out and the gangs had no direction. You know, we could say a history, you know, it's a million reasons. But I will say this, it sounds like you want to get to a point, so I'm going to be quick and brief. But
go ahead,
I'm going to say this. Why are Why do people like wrestling? That's violent. Why do people watch violent movies? Why do people participate in violent games? Why did they have gladiator sports back in the day? Why do people like to play football? Why do people like to see struggle and triumph?
Sure.
I think it's something deeper in the human spirit, you know, that people give into the will to want to be justified so deeply that they delve into a place they lose respect for the person and they're dealing with, you know.
That's
what they say, you know, treat those, love your neighbor how you love yourself, you know. I mean, that's you have to keep that mindset in place at all times, not delve into that violent place, and it's a choice. You know, and each person, but collectively as a people, you know, what is the reason? You know, I'm looking for it too. I have my theories, and I have the things that I think, you know, I have the things that I can point at, but each one is starts with each man. Be the change you want to see.
I appreciate what you're saying. Over the last 12 years, as the primary researcher for Building Families and Communities Institute, I have amassed a great deal of research and evidence-based identities of the problem, the nature of the problem we're talking about, relative to the violence of African-American males across urban America. And we've used the qualitative tradition of research to understand through observation and participation exactly what the root cause and the nature of it is. So we do have some. We bring answers. That's what we're doing with our lecture series, is bringing answers and clarity to those issues. So I appreciate the question in our conversation. And if I could just bring it back to our topic tonight, African-American millennials. And by millennials, I'm only referring to the generation that Strauss and Howell, who came up with this concept in the 80s, that they identified. Well, I'm sorry, 1991 and then 2000, they wrote two books about the topic. And if we can just, Mr. Abney, it looked like we lost our other caller there. Perhaps he'll call us back. We'll entertain him if he does. And you can call us here at 657-383-0944. We'll be happy to entertain your question or comments. This is about dialogue. So we definitely want to extend courtesy to our guests who have taken time to be with us, but we certainly want to hear from our callers as well. And we welcome your input, and we want to hear from you where you are, and there's some substantive information you can share to the dialogue. That'll be fine. As always, we bring our monologue in to bring context to our conversation, and that will be based on historical fact or anthropological fact, sociological fact, so that we always have a reference point for what we're saying. Again, BFC Institute, that's our primary focus for the talk show as well as the seminar and lecture series. Having said that, Mr. Abney, if you will, sir, will you speak to this question?
Yes, sir.
We were talking about largely that the fact that there are different connotative expressions or titles or identities, sub-identities given to the same group of people over a period of time. And I'm saying 398 years now, okay?
Yeah.
That group of people that if you were to go to Chicago, go to the Treme neighborhood of New Orleans or here in Nashville, or you go to certain voting precincts in Miami, Florida, or in Houston, Texas, or in Indianapolis, Indiana, or Detroit, those places where you find high incidence of crime, poor or low educational accomplishments, poverty, households that are broken without fathers, sleeping under the same roof with their children. These are the indications that we're talking about. Explain to me, Mr. Abney, how should, if anybody that's interested in helping this subgroup that we just identified, how should African-Americans of the millennial generation be taught about their ethnic characteristics? Now, I know we are part of a whole because we have several other ethnic groups in America, across America, But specifically, for the sake of self-identity and self-progress, how do we focus on teaching them about ethnic character? Will you speak to that for me?
I think we can, you know, begin, you know, really, I think the best way is homeschool system, you know. And
did
I
you,
know this is
speak on your phone again. We didn't hear you clearly.
Okay. I
say
think
that.
the best way, you know, to really deal with the lack of knowledge of history of self at this point in a school system in these radical times we live in is homeschool.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't depend on the education system to take it up on his hands, especially not during the Trump administration to you know, educate black people on who they are. You know, I mean, it's okay. So if not homeschool, you know, I mean, literally, you're going to have to learn this stuff at home. You know, I mean, and it's going to have to become a priority of the elders as well, you know, to reach out to the younger people, you know.
Okay.
Hold on one second.
All right. While he's doing what he's doing,
can you hear me?
Hear his point. Yes, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Yeah. I said
go ahead.
It's going to be up to the – yeah, it's going to be up to the elders and the young elders to reach out to the younger, the younger millennials and before then, you know, to let and the ones that are coming after them to let them, you know the importance of. And we have this is something that we really have to focus on. We, you know, us as a people, we have been so busy trying to assimilate and just be a part. You know, that time is over. Obama is in and out. You know, we can see from the direction of, you know, who the president is and what he on. You know, it's best that we get on what we need to be on. You know, and handle business in house. You know, because I just don't think that you know it's gonna come from anybody else except us. So, and that, I think that deals with the violence thing too. If you don't know
Absolutely.
That the man next to you is your brother, you know,
right.
or your cousin,
right.
or
you don't value, or you don't value him as such,
and you don't value him as such, or you don't value him as such, then you know it's a little easier to pull the trigger. It's a little easier to pull the trigger when you listening to songs, you know, and it's talking about pulling the trigger. You know, I got a 17 shots in my in my 38, you know, I got a Glock in my Rari and 17 shots in my 38, you know. It's,
right.
it's easy, you know, to pull the trigger when you watch TV and you watching Law and Order and it's always a black dude doing something messed up, you know, or, you know, getting a shakedown on something or, you know, you watch a TV show and then, you know, you just see a black dude always doing, you know, emasculated or doing something. You know, it's easy not to see the value. So
okay.
I think we need to get to – yeah.
You're making a great point. Before you get too far away, I wanted to make this point, and we're saying the same thing. Education is a process, okay,
mm-hmm.
of providing information. Now, aside from education, what a culture – what elders of a culture have to do is determine what are the aims or the goals of our information disseminating process. In other words, what is it that we want to teach our young? And that becomes
mm-hmm.
the identification of what your curricular structure is or your content material. I would submit to you that for many particularly challenged urban Afro-American families, because culturally, Mr. Abney, historically, all of us, I won't say everybody, but a good number of people, particularly those who are caught up in this tendency for them not to have identified with the common set of values, a cultural heritage that shapes and directs their identity, it's difficult for the basis of cultural education to take place. I raised a question about ethnic characteristics. Well, if nobody ever told you that even as if you want to call yourself African-American, it's important that they know through the learning process that they are not always characterized as African-American. And moreover,
mm-hmm.
their heritage began long before they came to
the land we call America right now. Their ancestors
right.
had very different constructs for identifying themselves spiritually, physically, and culturally, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
If we don't know that, if we don't know that, sir, how can we, you and I can live on the same block with 100 other people, but if we're not all in agreement on that, we can very well still be going in different directions.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the problem with respecting your brother and identifying him as a part of who you are. It becomes a dog-eat-dog world.
Yep.
Because I can tell you, having grew up in the housing projects of Chicago, survival dictated that you look out for yourself and that you hold
yep.
others around you suspect. That was the nature
yep.
of the environment, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And so what we find ourselves doing is we find ourselves asking ourselves over and over again, why? The truth of the matter is, systemically, when you look at this subgroup of people, as I identified earlier, who are in this particular geographic location called United States of America, under its legal system, its social orientation, and its political control, it is very clear that if you have not been properly taught how to identify and how to carry yourself within the context of that society, you're going to have problems. And,
yeah,
you know, if you can forget about leaving outside of the ghetto, if you will, because if you haven't learned to identify those basic concepts or precepts there, when you get among the larger context of society, you're going to have a problem.
Yeah.
This is where we need to focus when we talk about ethnic character and identifying purpose and direction as a result of everybody else. I like what you said. Now, there are a whole lot of other influences now, and some of these interest groups such as LGBT, and
mm-hmm.
they're entitled, according to American law, to be who they want to be, how they want to be. I'm not even talking about that. What I'm talking about is a cat cannot say to himself, I don't want to be a feline anymore because I want to be a bovine, I want to be a wolf or a dog. Something ain't going to
mm-hmm.
end up there. But
exactly.
if all a cat knows, if all a cat sees, if all a cat experiences is the behavior of the bovine, the wolf, the dog, I can understand from an early age how they would gravitate to that and try to imitate that. That's all they know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Hence,
again,
the primary challenge with catching our young brothers and sisters who find themselves running like wild people in the streets. I've said it many times here in Nashville as I worked in various places. You know, it doesn't matter if you're 15 years old. I don't care if you got a banana in your hand. You have no business out of the house after 8:30 at night standing on the street.
Right.
Certainly not supervised. You can have a banana or a pistol in your hand. Either one of those tell me that somebody has not properly supervised your whereabouts and your time for you.
Right.
Which is the nature of the problem.
Yeah.
So, the next question that I did want to delve into, we got a few more minutes, about 30 minutes before we close. Let me go to our next break here. And when we come back, I want you to answer for me, Mr. Abney, if you will, this question. I have two more questions I want to pose to you. One, the first one was, how should African Americans of the so-called millennial generation balance their social, political, and economic realities in the United States with any interest they may have in sustaining traditional Afrocentric culture? Some may say it's not important, but when we come back on the other side, let's address that. Let's go to this next break, and when we come back, we'll hit it.
Hello, right. listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in this traveling lecture series.
And welcome back to Talk Street. This is your host, Ruben Dockery. We are glad to have our special guest tonight, Mr. Mario Abney out of New Orleans, Louisiana, who is a professional musician and cultural icon. As well, I should state that he and his company are going to be supporting our traveling to the New Orleans area in the future. And tell us a little bit about how... Tell us a little bit, Mr. Abney, about how individuals can get your products and tell them about your webpage and how they can listen to your music and that sort of thing.
All right. Well, you can get in touch with my music. You can go to my website, www.theabneyeffect.net, www.theabneyeffect.net. And I have two singles you can download at on iTunes. One song is named The Step by Mario Abney. The other song is named Instant Grits by Mario Abney. Also, I have a business where we're helping to help. We're helping grieving families send their loved ones off in a very celebratory way, where my band, my brass band here from New Orleans and with connections in Chicago, we perform services of funerary relief, where we help the family grieve through music and we escort the family with a second line, like traditional in New Orleans. So you can also, you'll be able to get in touch with me at a later time for more information on that. And
Great. That's outstanding. That's outstanding. You heard a sample of his music. That last tune you heard was called Bless, and that's from the Abney Quintet there. Okay. Well, we were talking. You're listening to Talk Straight. Call us. Feel free to give us a call at 657-383-0944. Before we left, I wanted you to answer that question for me, Mr. Abney, if you will. Take a stab at it anyway, and I'll come back and respond. I think we got our caller back now. How should African-Americans in the millennial generation, born between 1982 to 2000, balance their social, political, and economic realities in the United States with any interest they may have in sustaining traditional Afrocentric culture? We kind of talked about that a little bit today. You want to respond to that for me?
Okay. Well, they have a symbol called a Sankofa bird. And the Sankofa bird is a bird that looks back in order to move forward. So they have a concept called Afrofuturism. When Afrofuturism, it's pretty much creating the future culture for a Black America through through the arts, through business, through communication, through you know, through different ways of social influence, through movies, through sci-fi, you know, through the imagination, through spiritual means of the ancestors. So there are, you know, the way I'm looking at things, I'm really trying to be the change that I want to see in society, because, you know, I've been looking at this thing for a minute, you know. I'm not too old, you know. I'm right a little bit past the millennial age, you know. But, you know, in my studies, I've been, you know, looking at things, and I've just come to the level, you know, to be the change I want to see in society. You know, one time some young guys broke into my car, and my wife caught them breaking into the car, and, you know, I chased them down and everything like that. I didn't call the police on them. Nope, didn't call the police on them. I talked to them, you know, and I sat down and I talked. It was, you know, and, you know, first of all, I was bold enough to take it as a community problem. You know, I didn't even think of if they had a gun or anything like that. I wasn't running in fear, you know, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, I ended up talking to them, and it ended up, you know, offering them drum lessons. And, you know, they had a certain type of respect, you know, for me after that. You know, I moved since then, you know, so I don't really see them anymore. But, you know, these young guys need direction, you know. So instead of me, you know, calling the police or A, B, C, and D, I took the opportunity to be the change that I wanted to see in society.
Gotcha. Can you hold that thought, please? I got a caller from 918, and the last four digits are 6865. Welcome to Talk Straight. You're on live, and you're talking with Mr. Mario Abney, special guest tonight, and yours truly, Reverend Dockery, who's the host. Go ahead, caller.
Well, hello, Mr. Abney.
Hello.
I liked what you had to say. I'm calling from Tulsa, Oklahoma, where there is the Elliot Williams case, the 37-year-old man that was left in a medical jail cell to die.
Yes.
He had no food or water for 6 days. The closing arguments are tomorrow, and I cannot get anyone from major market media to pick up the story. So I don't know if anybody wants to talk about that. Closing arguments are tomorrow, and I'm hoping it'll be like the Bates trial, and we get a quick guilty verdict. This will send the former sheriff to prison. I cannot wait. I've sat in the courtroom, listened to the testimony.
I'm blown away hearing, you know. Well, I don't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, you please go ahead.
Look, like, okay, honestly, right? We are at a place in our conscious minds where we need to admit that we are, this warfare on us, you know? The system that is in place historically, the system that is in place historically has been the same system that has been oppressing us for hundreds of years. But, you know, we turn to this system to, you know, look for justice. You can't find justice in an unjust system. You can't – justice is not given, it's taken. Now, we got churches on every corner, Black neighborhood, yet when they kill one of us, you know what I'm saying? Everybody go to church every time. How many churches will actually go down to the jailhouse and say, we let our loved one out? We ain't leaving until we get our loved one. And be about it, you know, and be about whatever needs to go down. You see, that's just how I feel. You know, go ahead.
This is great conversation. Caller, this is Reverend Dockery, this is the host for Talk Straight.
Thank you.
If you will, give us a little bit of background on the issue there in Tulsa, if you will. Just a brief synopsis, if you don't mind.
Elliot Williams is was a 37-year-old African-American veteran. He loved his family. He had a tough month where he found that his mother had stage 4 cancer. His wife was leaving him. He's at a motel. And the sheriff department of Tulsa goes outside of their jurisdiction to go get Mr. Williams and arrest him. Somewhere in that jail, they break his neck. And I've heard the lead nurse talking about it. You know, the doctor didn't know that that was his patient until after he was dead. He was not considered a medical emergency till after he was dead. That's from the lead nurse. I heard the testimony. And this is a federal case where this could be landmark for state Supreme Court and Supreme Court. That's why it's so important.
Change
this is the same sheriff that we chased out. We forced that sheriff to resign. And that was not easy. We had to use the grand jury system. If we organize, educate ourselves, we can make a change. It's more than just demanding your loved one out. You got to be smarter than that. Because some of those people are wicked.
No, I understand. But I understand. But this is a conundrum that we're in, right? Well, I don't want to call it conundrum. I don't want to look for a better word. But this is the spot. This is the situation that we're in as a people. We continually look for justice in an unjust system. If one of us get arrested, and we get pulled over and get arrested, and everyone automatically assumes you're going to be safe in jail. The jail is not responsible.
Don't rebel.
Everyone automatic. If you don't have the money for the bail, you are going to be stuck in jail. And everybody automatically assumes that you will be safe in jail. In your mind, in the mind of... Oh, go ahead.
Mr. Abney. Hold on one second. Let me kind of keep our... I don't want us to get away from our topic tonight. But I think this is caller from Oklahoma. I believe what you're saying is relevant to what we're talking about. Because there are some young people in the millennial generation who needs to understand that there are some basic principles, as well as things that you can do to hold political officials, legal officials accountable for what they should do.
Yeah.
I think that's how it's relevant. But now let me say this to you, caller, and I would like, if it's okay for you, I'd like to follow up with you to learn a little bit more and move forward in the future. I'm originally from Chicago. I grew up in a housing project. And nobody was pulled over more by the police than I was. Slapped upside the head with pistols and arms stretched behind your back, things like that. That's what we grew up experiencing. I came to Nashville to go to school, and by the grace of God, and we finished there. And now I do what I do. But I'll say this. I have worked as a correction officer. I've worked as a youth detention supervisor and a state-run facility. I've worked as a public school educator on the high school level and worked in the nonprofit sector for the last 20 years now and pastored. And what I have found is there are issues, breakdown in communication on both sides relative to the civic expectations for young people as well as those representing civic government. There are some things that need to be worked out, and I think that what you offer tonight is very important in that regard. There is some work that we can do there. I hear what Mr. Abney is saying, that there is this fear that when we engage ourselves in society, we're going to lose. If I'm hearing him correctly, that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
And
if I think
you might agree. Go ahead.
Reverend Doctor, if I might just jump in for a second. This is the mind. And this is the control that they have over the conscious mind of black people.
Okay.
If someone gets arrested and it's clearly visible this is an unfair arrest, everyone is going to assume that the person getting arrested is going to be treated fairly enough to be kept alive until they get the money to bail out. If you are arrested unfairly, why is it that they will treat? Why do people think that you will be treated fairly or treated safely, and they arrest you unsafely?
Let me answer that question. That's a good question. Hold your thought. Let me answer that question for you. Because legally, they are held to that that accountability. That's why
that
they
would
think
be
that.
That's okay.
Hold on one second. But the breakdown is, oftentimes when individuals engage with law enforcement, for various reasons, there are conflicts there. The best thing one can do, is to be compliant and to record that mentally, record what's going on. And if that officer, or like she's talking about in the jail, when they are wrong, they should be held accountable to the fullest extent of the law.
If I might say, the reality that we're living in, the reality of the last 400 years, the reality is not that. That is not the reality. That was not Eric Garner's reality when he said, "I can't breathe." They knew the law. The police knew the law. Everybody knew the law around them. Everybody saw this was illegal. Now, I mean, what I'm saying is we don't live it. First of all, we have to accept that we don't live in a reality. We don't not live in a reality where the law is honored by the people who enforce.
Okay. Hold on one second, caller. Hold on one second. Go ahead and finish your thought, Mr. Abney.
The law is not honored by the people who enforce it. What do you do in the situation where the law is not honored by the people who enforce it and the legal process, no matter who you put in and what you do? See, we're dealing with something where legality and morality are not one in the same.
You're raising a great point. And I don't mean to be rude and cut you off, but we're kind of moving away from our topic. But what I want to do is hear from this caller from 615-1098 is the suffix of his number. And I don't want to overlook our first caller from Oklahoma.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
We're having good conversation. That's the nature of the show. We have about 13 minutes before our show closes for the night. But this is good. Go ahead, caller from 615.
Okay. I don't want to take too long, but I've been listening to the young man. So what he's saying, me listening to him, what he's saying is when a police officer pull him over, they talk nasty to him. They be belligerent. That's not the answer. Be compliant.
I didn't say that at all.
You know?
I didn't say that at all.
This is the vibes that I'm getting from you. I'm 59 years old, sir. If the police pull me over, they pull me over a lot of time. They said I ran a stop sign, which I know I didn't, but it was a part of town that I was in. I didn't argue. I gave my driver license. Hey, you want my insurance? They said no. I know what they want to do to me. You millennials, I'm a baby boomer. I was born in 1958. The millennials, was it the 80s or 90s? Be
correct.
Compliant. Mm-hmm. You know, I said it to you, young black man. Go to the library. You speak black. You said that black is the essence of all races. Go to the library, and the main library, and get the Black Negro Journal. And I want you to do one thing, and I want you to keep this name in mind. Keep slave owner Anthony Johnson. I want you to keep him in mind. Look, when it comes to the law, hey, don't get angry when they pull you over. They can say you ran a stop sign. They can say you did this or did that. Do you have a driver's license, sir?
You asking me?
Do you? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
You,
yeah.
Do you have registration?
Let me say this. Let me say this. I'm not even on that vibration to get pulled over. That's the spirit I roll with. You know what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying about how to address.
You know, a police officer and everything. This is not about that. My scenario was when you see an unfair arrest, you see an unfair beatdown. We live in a mindset. We are so froze. 400 years ago, when a slave owner was beaten, one of the people on the slave on the plantation.
What did I just tell you?
Let me finish my thought.
Gentlemen. All right, Mr. Abney, I hear you. What we want to do is extend courtesy to our guest. Mr. Abney is our guest. Allow him to finish his thought. But before we leave, I want to hear lastly from our caller, 918. Let me go to Mr. Abney. Finish your thought, Mr. Abney, and then we'll go
okay.
from there.
So we live in a situation where the power of human beings is such that they can still have the power over other human beings, and that's the human condition. But what I'm telling you is 400 years ago, it would be a situation where the police or the paddy rollers or the slave catchers from the plantation, you know what I'm saying? The police was started in a plantation slavery. So it would be a situation 400-some years ago just like now, because people going to jail end up generating money for the jail system and the criminal justice system. You understand what I'm saying?
Okay.
So 400 okay. years ago and 400 years now, it's still the same thing, and it's the same color per se or okay. per such. It's the, for the same system. It's the same thing.
I see. Okay.
Okay.
Now,
may I speak?
Hold on one second, caller. Hold on one second, caller. When we began the show, we gave context for our conversation, and I presented research-based evidence, both empirical and some of it was by trial and error. But we do have a context. Let me hear, hold your thoughts this one, guy. 918, thank you for calling. You want to say anything before our time get away from us here? We got about
I realize
8 minutes.
Your time is short, and thank you for your kind consideration. The 13th, that documentary is key to watch. Because as soon
yeah.
as they criminalize you, they can take your rights away. If you are
okay.
stopped by the police, again, be polite. Ask, am I being detained? These are key questions to ask. And then, am
mm-hmm.
I free to go? Whether you're in the car, you're walking down the sidewalk, ask those things. And when you leave that officer, let's say you're walking, just walk like a normal pace. Don't give them an excuse to say that he was running from me, she was running from me. And in six
okay.
states, you are allowed to get a grand jury investigation through the power of a citizen, not elected official, but the citizen. And if you don't have
mm-hmm.
that in your state, talk to your elected officials and see what you can do. Oklahoma, Ohio, I think Arizona, and I'm sorry I'm forgetting the other three, have that right. That is how we got rid of that treacherous ex-sheriff of Tulsa. There are some issues
okay.
in Tulsa, but we did things
okay.
in a way that were productive. Thank you for your time.
Right. Hey, Nicola, if it's okay, I'd like to reach out to you at a later date and follow
sure.
up on the story. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for
the
question.
All right. 615, did you want to finish your thought there?
Yes, Mr. Abney. He talking about 400 years of slavery. Go to the
mm-hmm.
main library in any state and get the Black Negro Journal and
I'm
look
check
up
that out.
Anthony Johnson. Anthony Johnson. Black Negro Journal. Check it out.
I'm going to check
okay.
it out. I'm going to check it out.
All right.
Thank you.
So let me do this in our last few minutes. Let me bring us back to where we began. We were really talking about the millennial generation and the difficulty for individuals who are under the pressure to conform to various social influences across America. But more
lack of learning.
More specifically to young people who have been referred to or like to identify themselves as African-American, and how is it particularly that a young man, a young woman, establish themselves in the context of their American rights of citizenship such that they are not succumbed to anyone else's will, but they're living according to their own individual right of identity as espoused in the U.S. Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and their pursuit of happiness as they see it. Great conversation. I'm afraid that time has gotten away from us now.
I've enjoyed it.
Great. We enjoyed having you all. And I want to thank my guest, Mr. Mario Abney. In case you haven't heard, he is a professional musician out of New Orleans, Louisiana. And he is working with our organization to bring our seminar and lecture series to New Orleans for people
okay.
there, this target
Good.
Population that we're dealing with. But we're grateful to have
Good.
You, and we're grateful to have you, caller. 615 and our caller from 918 as well for input. And I think that's a very relevant issue. I'm going to research the issue there in Tulsa and reach out to her, and perhaps we will do a show around that, because we can't save that young man's life, Williams. It's gone. But perhaps we can prevent someone else from losing theirs. And that's really where we have to,
right.
That's the lens we have to look at it from.
Yeah.
If you can contact me tonight, I can put you in more contact with people that have been there every day.
Great.
If you can call me after the show, we can make an appointment.
We'll do that. The show ends about 8:30, and we'll give you a call, and we'll do that.
May I add one more thing? Anthony Johnson, this the gentleman that caller mentioned.
Nick, Black Negro Journal, look him up. You know, you'll be in
there's
touch with him.
There's two PDFs that are open source that you can look up on the internet that look compelling.
Hey, yo, Reverend Dockery, talk to me when he look it up, and talk to me. I want to hear response from you.
Okay, well, he'll be back again. We're going to have him come back again.
Good. I hope he's looking. Hey, just go and look it up.
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now. I'm reading it right now.
Black slave on Anthony Johnson. Yeah.
I'm reading about him right now. That's something of the human mind, good or evil, to another man. And if you were listening to me before, I was talking about of the human mindset, like. Why do we give in to conflict? You say you got to be the change that you want to see. Why do you want to pull the trigger? You understand, like I said earlier, you know, this is something of the human spirit. Because, like, check it out, you know, like football. Why do we like football? Why do we like seeing the struggle of one person against the next person? Why do we like to see wrestling and boxing? Boxing is violent. People get brain injuries and everything, right? But why is it – what part of the human spirit is being fed, and how are we being fed right now? You know, vicariously through the TV, through movies, through the things we celebrate.
Black men still don't treat black men right. White men don't treat white men right.
Right. That's
we're gonna get it right.
As far as the system that I was speaking about, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's dirty people on both sides, black and white, because you could have a white person fighting all their life. You could have a white person fighting all their life, you know what I'm saying? To help black people. And then you can have somebody common and cooning on the other side working against their brothers and sisters just because they work for the system and they got the end and they see the wrong, but they turn their back the other way. You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
So, I mean, that's a human condition. That's a choice.
I hate to cut you off. We got about a minute here before we leave. And thank you for listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reuben Dockery. And what we're going to do is we're going to leave with a tune from Mr. Abney. It's entitled Blessed. Our next show will be next Tuesday at 7 o'clock. We will certainly be in touch with our caller tonight, and we will follow up on the information, and perhaps we'll bring a show in the future there. This is Talk Street. This is your host, Reuben Dockery. We're grateful for having Mr. Abney with us tonight, and we leave on one of his songs.